Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Danny Meringue.
Dusty Bun.
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours, whether it is on 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.tv/1080AMTheFan, or youtube.com/1080AMTheFan. Party on, party people. Let's go. The Oregon Ducks head to Ann Arbor, Michigan to take on the Michigan Wolverines. First time Ducks head to the big house since 2007.
Hey, what happened then?
They beat the brakes off of Michigan. That was a Michigan team that entered the year number two overall, and then lost App State, and then lost to Oregon.
The wheels fell off.
Off. Yeah, that was a rough season for Michigan. This one has been rough too. Hasn't been the season that Michigan had hoped that they were going to have, especially coming off a national championship a year ago. But when you look at it, they have played an insanely difficult schedule this year. 5-3 overall. Their losses are to Texas, Washington, and Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But when you play a non-conference schedule that does include Texas, that's a big in right there. Ducks enter this game, I think the line has been kind of fluctuating between 14.5 and 13.5. I think it's down to 13.5 right now.
Michigan has a massive fan base.
They do, but that line's tight. I mean, just think of what it was last week when number 20 Illinois, which beat this Michigan team 21-7, mm-hmm. coming into Autzen Stadium, that line opened at 25, yeah. and ended up closing at 21 and ended up getting punched in the mouth.
Looks like right now it is minus 15, according to DraftKings.
Minus 15. I think big money coming in on the Ducks.
So I think the justification or reasoning behind this is not that they don't think Oregon is going to win or win comfortably. It's that how they're going to win is not going to be as explosive, I think. And I think that it has to do probably with Michigan's defense. They do have three day one players on that defense that will be in the NFL draft in a couple months. You've probably got the best corner in the country.
Who's been hurt, missed last game, and is questionable for this game. Actually, Dan Lanning talked about Will Johnson, who is one of the best corners in the country, and his availability and what he changes for this Michigan defense.
Yeah, he's a great player. He has ball production. He gets in and out of breaks. He's able to take away, you know, a side of the field. So, he's definitely a guy that would make an impact.
If they don't have him,
it starts to fall apart real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. And his injury is, I mean, they're very tight-lipped on absolutely everything and everybody.
Yeah, remember the starting quarterback situation when Alex Orgie was going to start, open the season? And lo and behold, it wasn't Alex Orgie.
They're giving us like hockey injury reports, though, because they're like lower body.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Lower leg ankle injury, maybe. But there's these conversations out of Michigan that are, is he protecting himself for his draft stock? And I hate this. Like, every time somebody is injured or sitting out and the season's not going your way, they're like, oh, he's going to sit out because he wants to protect himself for the draft. They're all saying, Sharon Moore is saying, no, he's going to play. He will play again. We're just not sure if he's going to play this week. He did not play in a rivalry game last week against Michigan State, so that does tell you something about severity of it. But if he is not in there, remember when Ohio State came in, Denzel Burke was one of the top corners in the country, mm-hmm. too, and Oregon said, all right, well, we'll see. We're going to go at him. By the way, Nebraska did the exact same thing to Ohio State secondary, mm-hmm. and said, oh, we'll try to go over the top. We'll take the top off this defense. And, you know, they said, we trust our guys a little bit more than you trust yours. And when you have a corner that is as good as Will Johnson, people are just, you don't want to go at him,
no.
because of how good he has proven on tape that he can be. But there are teams that'll say, all right,
dude for dude, we'll push you.
We'll try to see. And when you have an accurate quarterback, that's when you want to go at those guys. And Dylan Gabriel has shown some pinpoint accuracy over the last handful of weeks. Dan Lanning did talk about the big guys up front because Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant, they are healthy.
Terrifying.
And they are menaces on the interior of that defensive line.
Yeah, you watch them. They're game wreckers, right? They're guys that you have to have a game plan for. You know, but 78 and 55 both, they make an impact, you know, consistently in the game. They beat, you know, single blocks. They're certainly good against double teams. They're good against the run and the pass. So they're guys that you have to spend time and effort for. And, you know, anytime you have guys like that up front, it makes it easier to cover in the back end.
That is going to be the big one for Oregon, right? Is the success that we have seen with Oregon's offense, especially recently, has been predicated in the balance that they've shown, right? It is when their offensive line started to click and you have got the threat of run and pass on any given play, and whether it's the RPO game or decided run or pass calls, keeping defenses on their heels and being predictably unpredictable is the toughest thing for a defense to defend. If you can make Oregon one-handed, then all of a sudden that is where you give yourself a puncher's chance. And that may be where this line and this betting line is condensing a little bit, right? Is that if Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant can force Oregon to be one-dimensional and to throw the ball, the game will be tighter.
Yep. And that's why I was kind of going with that, is the idea of you play on the edges as opposed to, because, I mean, you can't avoid those guys, but you also kind of need to avoid those guys. Because if you try to play with them, even if you're Oregon, you're Georgia, you've got, you know, interior, your offensive line has got guys who are going to be Sunday players. Those two dudes, again, those are day one guys. And they are, because they're so disruptive. And it doesn't matter how good you are. Eventually, they're going to make plays. And if you can limit that damage, it just makes things easier. Now, again, if you're Oregon, you can't play scared. You can't play afraid. You can't avoid them at all costs. But you don't want to give them the opportunities to be those game breakers.
Yeah, but what's crazy about this Michigan defense is they have those guys up front. And I think it is similar to Oregon a little bit in that they have not been dominant against the run. Mm-hmm. I mean, USC ran for, what, 290 on them? Arkansas State ran for three bills on them. You know, there's yards to be had there. And it's not like over the last handful of weeks, they have shorted up and they have been clamping down a little bit more. But Lanning talked about the importance of that run game.
Well, I mean, it's something we're preparing for, is the ability to be able to run the ball on a team like this. I think that's important. When you play in games like this, they've always been a really physical run game, you know, team. They've always done a good job of running well. And I think our offense and our team is most efficient when we have a good run game going. So that'll be an important piece for us to try to figure out.
I think there is this idea that Oregon is still a finesse team.
Yeah, and they're not.
And I think that is not, that isn't true any longer. And I know that there's a lot of Michigan fans that believe that Oregon still is, you know, a play on the edges team. And if you watch and you see, you know, the screen game that they do implement to Tez and to Evan Stewart and getting balls out quick on the perimeter, it may look like they are, but their run game is more power-oriented than it is outside zone, inside zone, zone read like the Chip Kelly days.
Well, let them believe that, and then
you're about to find out.
Yeah, but it's really weird, though, that there hasn't been this evolution of what Oregon is, because really Mario Cristobal is the one that kind of started the more physical power run game at Oregon. And that it's kind of transferred over multiple offensive coordinators, mm-hmm. that the physicality up front is where they are going to be
get big
winning
dudes
games
in
on the run game.
Pool, increase physicality.
Well, no, it's scheme-wise, yeah. too. Like, scheme-wise, it is a lot more mm-hmm. power run than it was before.
Do you feel like that trend is even more so true, even just across college football in general? It feels like it's gone.
Absolutely.
Less zone and more power.
Yeah. There is... Well, it's a blend of the two that you can have, because there was this old... Like, the old way of thinking is you either have to be a predicated zone... Mm-hmm. prominent offense in your run game, or you are a downhill hat on hat man on man blocking scheme. And then with the proliferation of the RPO, it has gone to now we can do both of these things. We can throw RPOs and we can run power, we can run duo, like, and you're seeing teams do it all the yeah. time. And I think that is something that as offensive coordinators have like started adding more in their hat. Like we see far more balance, and it's not just you're one or the other. And you see it a lot more with the elite offensive lines, mm-hmm. and you got to have the dudes that come up that way, but you're seeing it in high school football more, and it's all trickle up.
I think it's the same adage of like, you're seeing bigs in the NBA shoot threes. You're now seeing offensive linemen that years before they were kind of a scheme dependent, like, hey, this guy's more of a, hey, we're going to play on the edges, we're going to make quick feet. But now it's hard to find these guys. The Penei Sewells, as rare as they are, they're becoming more common, yeah. where you get guys that are big and can maul you.
The mutants are taking over.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, they're just, what's his name? Tate Rutledge, who's out for Georgia. He's very much the same way, just this absolute behemoth of a human. The Colts left guard from Notre Dame. God, what is his name? Absolute
Quentin Nelson.
Quentin Nelson, absolute mauler. But also, just flip if you flip through social media and you have NFL highlights that come up, you will just see him out on the edges pulling and murdering people.
Yeah,
and you're just like, that's not supposed to happen.
Haven't seen that.
That's not supposed to get out there that fast. And so yeah. you get. I think they're just. The skill level of these guys that are just so big, their ability to play hat on hat versus actually playing in the zone and getting to second levels and getting to the outside, it's just allowing more. Because I think in the past, you either recruited for, I'm going to play between the tackles, or I'm going to play on the edges. Just because it was hard enough to find good offensive linemen. It's hard enough, it's significantly harder, 10 years ago, to find offensive linemen that were great at both.
Well, and yeah, the skill sets were always predicated to, all right, this kid has never blocked a man concept mm-hmm. in his life. Well,
it's just stretch and reach.
It's going to take him a really long time for us to break that out of him and teach him how to re-block. Well, now you have high schools that are saying, we can do both. Mm-hmm. We can do both. And that changes. That really has changed the game. Is you can get certain programs to be multiple, but trickle up is never more prominent than in football. Like yeah. football, everything in like every other sport is something happens at the top and it all fades down. Mm-hmm. In football, it is you start at the bottom and it works its way up.
Because the skill level needs to increase.
It does. And as the guys learn and other coaches, you can get away with more. And, mm-hmm. and to be quite honest, at the lower levels of football, you get more creativity out of like smaller schools that say, all right, well, how can we find an advantage, right? I mean, there's a lot of, like, some of the greatest football minds take stuff from the wing tee offense because a coach is like, we don't have big dudes. How can we get away with it? You know? How can we get away with having smaller linemen mm-hmm. and winning a football game? And you see a lot of the eye candy stuff and the way that things are taught as far as, you know, the dealer of a quarterback and play fakes and stuff like that. It comes from like wing tee yeah. offenses, and it trickles its way up into, you know, college and then eventually the NFL. I'm excited for this game though at Michigan. I think one of the things that Oregon has not played in a hostile environment yet.
No, and this is their first opportunity.
It really is. And it is it.
I'm interested to
Oregon
see
State
how,
was not, UCLA was yeah. not, Purdue was not.
I'm
they get two of them.
To see how, because, you know, Michigan fans and I think the old school Big Ten fans got their panties in a bunch when Autzen got a bunch of love for how loud it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they continued to parrot that they only have 60,000. How could it possibly be that loud? We have 100,000 at the Big House. We have 110,000 at Penn State. We have 100,000 at the Shoe. It's like, cool. You're also like, you know, 20 yards further off the field. And again, like Memorial Coliseum in LA can get like, was it 89,000 in there? But you've got the track, you've got the stadium pushed out, and it's got a traditional stadium with a slow slope.
Yeah.
Where Autzen is just, you know, tilted in on you.
I've never been to the Big House. I'm excited.
It's on the bucket list, and I'm mildly jealous.
I heard it is very wide.
Yeah, it's big. It's a big old stadium. Yeah.
Well, and I feel like it's not. Look, they were in the national championship game, but it's not the same Michigan team as last year.
Not even close.
And so it's a yeah. And were it close to that, this would be a big, huge thing. And so, but I feel like it's lost a little bit of its luster.
Yeah. Yep. Two touchdowns, though. From what we've seen, it wouldn't seem like it's a two-touchdown game, especially with the way... And I think the surprising part for me is with the way Oregon's defense has played recently, it is still a two-touchdown game, and you're playing a one-dimensional offense. We'll find out more, though, as this season and this week rolls on, because Oregon is now... heading to the Big House. First time for Dan Lanning, too. How about that? You see that? Mm. His first time there.
Oregon started out as a 2.5-point favorite, and now it's 15. I don't know if that 2.5 was like at the beginning of the season.
Yes. Okay. That was the opening line over the summer when they first put out the summer lines.
Okay.
That's not this week.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't figure. But that's a big swing. That's a big SWING.
Yeah. 13 points would be a doozy.
Well, a quarterback has been benched in the National Football League. Uh-oh. Next on The Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Another benching in the National Football League. Anthony Richardson. He done. Joe Flacco going to be the shot caller.
Did they put their hand up on his hip?
No, I don't think they did.
And said, when I dip, you dip, we dip.
Don't think they did this time. Maybe next time. Maybe right. next time.
No, they instead they said, you're dipping.
Yep. This is an interesting time to do it.
Yeah, the culmination of coming out of a game last week or asking out of a game because he was tired gives you some pretty bad optics.
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play. So I just, this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
That has taken the airwaves by storm over the last, 36 hours.
Yeah, are you not supposed to be a world-class athlete?
Well, if Anthony Richardson against the Houston Texans in a one-score game ended up pulling himself out for a play because he was tired, and that is like Cardinal sin number one. First of all, you're a quarterback. You're playing one way.
Yeah.
Dude needs some meal
Your
energy.
Offensive line does not do that. Nobody is calling for a break unless you... You know, wide receiver, running back, where you have numbers, you have depth, it's assumed that those guys will do it. To take a play off, it's not just a production standpoint, because although production hasn't been great, they knew he was a project.
Yeah, and quarterbacks, unless you get, look, you have to get blown up to come out for a play.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we all know with Brett Favre scandal, all this kind of crap. Remember the pictures coming out of that game against the Saints? What that dude went through, what he played through? how absolutely destroyed he was, didn't come out. Like, that's the deal, man. Unless you are destroyed, you don't come out.
Yeah. Now this opens it up. This is why this is the curious time, is that they lost a game to the Houston Texans, who lead the division. They are in the thick of the playoff hunt. They're sitting at 4-4, and the logjam of teams. We went over this yesterday. What, five teams in the AFC are 2-6? There's a lot of bad teams in the AFC right now. 4-4, you're sitting in a decent position. You need to start peeling off some wins. And if they think Joe Flacco can give them the better shot of doing that, then absolutely, you make the call and you say, all right, we're not going to waste a year. But it becomes a curious time when it comes 48 hours or less than 48 hours after Anthony Richardson pulls himself from a game because he said he was tired, and you ended up losing the game by 3 points. That one play, he's out. Him coming out for a breath did not dictate the outcome of the game. It's the optics of it and the fact that you can quickly lose a locker room and lose good graces within a locker room because of a situation like that.
And that becomes the question, right? Is do you... There's reporting from the newsbreakers that this benching has nothing to do with Anthony Richardson opting out of her play.
Okay.
Really?
And that's why it's a curious time, because it brings up this entire conversation.
Like, you can't, if you're going to do this, you almost can't do it this week. You almost have to do it next week.
Yep.
You have to go out there and be like, let's play. Like, this, the PR of this alone, and like the reality is, he probably lost the locker room. He probably lost the locker room by being a little too honest.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I realize this is his second season, and I don't know. I mean, he missed most of last. How do you already lose that locker room? Already.
Well, because of, something like that, right? I mean, it's one, guys don't, The developmental arc of a quarterback, especially, is a move that a franchise leadership has a conversation about, right? That is your general manager, your owner, and your head coach.
Well, because we talked about in the preseason, even like the I don't remember if it was the rookie meetings or what have you, where Anthony Richardson was the guy that stuck around and cleaned up after all of his teammates.
But this is where you can, all that stuff doesn't mean anything, because if you can't win games, that's all veterans in the locker room care about. Developmental arc is nothing but the front office and your coaching staff. In the locker room, your livelihood is based on the production that your team has and the wins and losses that you have, right? Was it Martellus Bennett? Everybody gets paid after winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong at all. So you need to win, and when the development is not as fast as they would like, then you have a comment like that. That is how a locker room can turn on you pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Right? Especially your offensive linemen, right? Your offensive linemen going,
are out there, hey, come on. Like, you know, peeing down their legs, staying on the field.
But and you add on top of that, Joe Flacco did come in because he has been injury prone, and he played really damn well. And so,
comeback player of the year.
You have all of those things kind of just adding up, and that's why this is the worst possible time. And oh, by the way, it's a week before the trade deadline. Also, not helping with all of the outside noise around the Indianapolis Colts, because you already have like national writers saying, all right, well, who's going to start making the calls to Indianapolis to see how available Anthony Richardson is? I kind of feel for the kid, because he was a guy. What was the thing on Anthony Richardson coming out of Florida? He hasn't played a lot. He hasn't played a lot of football.
No, he's still dumb young.
And one thing that their front office did was they had a lot of pieces ready to win. They went and hired Shane Steichen, who's doing a really good job of scheming up your offense to be competitive, to be win now, which means you're not in developmental mode. You're not in, hey, we're going to work through some things. We're going to have a roster that's not very good. We're going to go through these lumps, and then our quarterback's going to be okay. No, you play in a crap division outside of Houston. You can have a lot of winnable games on your schedule, and your roster is actually pretty damn good. You can win.
On both sides of the ball.
Yeah, you can win right now, and they don't have time for the developmental quarterback, which that puts them in a really curious place, because it's not like you're hitching your wagon to Joe Flacco moving forward. It means you're not going to be trading Anthony Richardson away. What do you do with him?
And this is why I always say you can't be in the middle. You got to be one or the other. You got, and this is the New York Giants in a nutshell. Again, great coach. They've got some weapons. You know, Malik Nabers is a dude. They've got pass rushers on the defensive side. But they don't want to strip it all the way down. They don't want to go away from it because of commitments made. Yep. It's like the best organizations make commitments. And then if they are punched in the face, wash your hands of it, get out. Look at the Houston Texans. Look at where they're at right now. They decided, screw this, we're out, we're going to suck, let's reset, let's deal what we need to do. Then when we feel like we're ready, let's build towards something, and then let's go.
That only lasted a year.
But again, did they make a commitment?
They sure did.
That's the thing. It's like, and if it comes together for you, great. If not, you rally back and you do it again. That's like, I don't understand why NFL teams are like, I understand you can't tank. There's more people on, you can though. You change your quarterback. You can. Literally one change. Bloop.
Yeah.
Does that make everybody frustrated? Sure. But if they're not going to be a part of it going forward, they're not going to be like, I don't like the optimization stuff that has become so prevalent in sports. But at some point in time, when you're talking about taking your organization from bleh to viable, that is right now, no matter what league, what sport you're talking about, the draft is the most viable way to improve and give you the best possible chances.
But I think what you're seeing at the trade deadline, the NFL doesn't operate that way. First round picks are very hard to come by.
Yes.
I mean, you can trade really good players and you're likely not going to get a first round pick, which makes it insanely difficult to go and hit that hard reset, right? And you cannot, and the hard part about tanking in the NFL is unless you have a rash of injuries, you can't have a roster bad enough to turn it around in short order. Like, you really can't.
I mean, you pull a quarterback, you can.
No, you can't, because I give you the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, but
okay. I mean, that's like, fair. There are that's so fair. Many
because
teams
they have,
that
they have so many. Well,
there are so many teams that just wallow in mediocrity because they're waiting for that quarterback. And they don't have a good quarterback.
You can't get it, though. And I mean, look, you can get lucky and fall into one, which happens every now and then. But otherwise,
yeah,
we know what the numbers are. It's getting a guy at the top.
You need that quarterback. But if your front office is doing their job, evaluating talent, mm-hmm. and you're waiting for that quarterback to come, but you're also hitting on other players. Like, that is why you have teams like, I mean, the Chicago Bears, they got their quarterback finally, right? But then they made their roster good enough around that quarterback mm-hmm. to where they're competent. I think this is the big gripe that the New York Giants have with their roster. Their roster isn't absolute trash.
No.
But their quarterback puts them in a spot where they're middle to back of the pack now. And it's like, great. What are we going to do? What are we going to do now? Because our pieces are good enough to not get us in a situation where we can draft that new quarterback. Because, oh, by the way, we're paying Daniel Jones a butt ton of money. Sucks.
It hurts.
It does.
All right, coming up on our worst day on the web. Have you ever seen something like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. And then it turns out that it's not the thing you thought it was. Think about that for a second. We'll get that on next here on Worst Day on the Web on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
You ever see those Instagram versus reality posts where, like, you see the videos that the influencers post at, like, some really Santorini, Greece? The top, the blue rooftop buildings, where he's like, oh, it looks amazing. And then the reality is you flip the camera around and it's a row of 300 people lined up for this one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, oh, that's terrible. I want nothing to do with that. This is one of those kind of situations where a woman saw this truly tremendous and beautiful glow in the sky. I mean, as I'm showing Dusty now,
yeah,
it's something you're just like, wow, that looks crazy. I mean, the Northern Lights is really cooking. Well, it turned out the Northern Lights was actually a tomato factory.
Oh, this is reminds me of like Parks and Rec, where like they're like, oh, look at the glow of the sunset, and they're like, yeah, no, that's the pollution from the Sweetums factory. Yeah,
it's no, the exact same thing.
There was this thing. What was it? About a year ago or so, there was a scientist, astronomer, whatever. Anyway, somebody way smarter than me and probably the both of you and all of us combined took a picture of like a picture of something in space, and it turned out it was just a close up shot of like a slice of salami.
Oh, somebody else did another one where it was a perspective thing where it was. It looked like
really similar to this.
No. And it's in the same vein. If you're looking at it from it, the perspective of it, when you first look at it, it looks like from 100,000 feet away, of the ocean and an island. Then you zoom in on it, and it's the blue painted wall with like the drywall flaked away. And you're like, it's so this woman takes these pictures of this tremendous red glow in the sky, and like, you know. Maybe got a little, look at how beautiful the aurora truly is. I've never seen anything like it. It's such a splendor to behold. It turned out it was LED lights that were being used, but what was the name of the place? The Great Blakenham Tomato Factory.
Well, was it north of where she was at? Because they're like, ma'am, you are south. We are southeast of you. This is not the Northern Lights. And by the way, you're in Alabama where you can't even see them.
Well, and was it near the sausage factory?
Where was she at?
England.
All right.
But perfect. I mean, like, I'm not going to lie. As I'm showing,
it is beautiful. Like, it's a beautiful. Yeah.
Looks great. There's a fog as it's England. And so these lights are. If there's a light fog in the air and you see the Northern Lights, shouldn't that be your first indicator that it's not the Northern Lights? Because what you need to see the Northern Lights is a perfectly clear sky.
Don't let the details get in the way of a good picture, you know?
It's like, ah!
She's never noticed the tomato factory before this either?
I guess not. She said, I was on my way to work to notice what I thought was something on fire through the trees. I parked and I thought what I could see was certainly an aurora borealis.
That's so great. I love that. There's been times I've thought I've seen like UFOs or something like that.
Have you seen the...
Nah, that was like a big old moth flying by. Flying by, caught it in my headlights.
Have you seen the video that was released by the government?
Nope.
Was it a UH-1? I think it was an attack helicopter. It's been declassified by the U.S. military.
All right.
There is what appears to be a like very large orb-shaped object that they tracked with the cameras. This is in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrifying.
Really?
It's not like a thing that disappears. Like they continue following it for a while and then they eventually lose it. But it's not like an eye floater. Where you're like, it's gone. You know, it's like, a slightly blurry image, but it was one of the ones that was declassed. I want to say like a month ago. But I'm
really,
yeah, I'll find it in the break and I'll show it to you. But it like, when we like get the full declassification on like Area 51, because it'll come eventually.
Because, will it though?
Yeah, because
don't we think it will?
Because aliens will either show up and kill us or we'll kill them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I feel like we've just been slowly killing them as they've come in peace because humanity, that's kind of been our MO. Something new and scary. Nope. Kill it. Something new, not scary, pretty docile. Nope, kill it. That seems to be just kind of how the United States or the world has operated. Oh, I don't know. Since humans have been in existence, we just end up killing things. So I don't know what I'm trying to be looking at. Oh, all right. Now I see it. Yeah, yeah, you got like you are showing me that UFO. Yeah, it took me a while to figure out what it was.
It's little. It's like on the.
It just looks
screen.
Like a little ball bearing rolling around on the ground, though. But it's going miles upon miles.
It's in the sky.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And it's not like one of those things again, where it's like blurry and kind of flies by. It's like, yeah, No, that's there and moving. Like, what the hell's going on here?
That's like the SNL skit with Kate McKinnon, which is hilarious, where they do it when Ryan Gosling comes on, where they do the... the government brings in all the people that have been abducted by UFOs. And they're like, why does this keep happening in trailer parks? She's like, let me tell you what these little guys did. My experience is totally different from yours.
You know, it's
they just slap me around for a little bit.
They just figure that's the people that won't be missed.
I know, but why not? Why not come to the city? Why not? Why not see what the city has to offer?
Why not take a few politicians with you?
Yeah, you go know? To DC. What are we doing here?
I'm not gonna miss them.
Nope, nobody.
No,
literally.
Oh no! If that actually happened, if like they just showed up like full on Independence Day, I'm not saying blowing up the White House. I'm saying like if they just showed up and like took all of the politicians, would we be mad?
Did you ever see that show, Designated Survivor?
Oh, yeah. That was the... Kiefer, right?
Yeah. He was like the Secretary of Transportation or something. And
yeah, it was a long way down.
Yeah.
And he was on the way out.
Yeah.
Well, they were trying to get rid of him.
Well, it's because they have when they have like those State of the Union speeches, they keep one person outside of the Capitol building.
Yeah, the continuance of government. Yeah.
You know, in case stuff. And it was the first season was actually kind of, I enjoyed the first season, and after that it went downhill.
Yeah, I did too. I like that show, Designated. Yeah.
It's like 24.
I'm a Kiefer fan too.
The first season of 24 was so good.
Yeah,
but then it was
never seen it.
Well, really?
I think there was even a couple seasons maybe of 24.
But I mean, like it was the idea was so fresh and new. We're like,
yeah.
Oh, well, okay, and
truth be told, I have a soft spot for Kiefer also because my wife's like family is my wife's grandmother is a Sutherland and like literally related to Donald and Kiefer.
Look at that.
I thought you were going to say like that was the hall pass.
Mm.
No,
that'd
Kiefer
make it a little bit more awkward now that we know they're related.
Right? Kiefer Sutherland is not my hall pass.
No. Vancouver text line. Why don't we use Area 51 as an amusement park?
Ooh,
because
yeah.
It's super hot out there. Remember, it is the middle of the Nevada desert.
Yeah, it's okay. We use Vegas as an adult amusement park.
You know
okay,
what? You're not wrong.
You get too close to Area 51 and you'll get your ass shot off, too.
Yeah, it's very true.
Oh, you guys remember when people were ready to storm Area 51? Oh, you guys remember that?
They tried. There's a guy, I know, because they're dumb. Yes, because they're dumb.
Yeah.
Yes. That's, look,
that we're going to storm Area 51. It's like, no, you're not. Yeah. You're going to get mowed down.
To be fair, that kind of sums up a lot of people today.
Well, I mean, again, as a place like that, besides the aliens, it's also a place where they develop and test our newest and most advanced weapons platforms.
Yeah.
Probably not the place to go.
Yeah. And they're, like, you know, doing surgery on aliens and stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
A lot of probing.
That's what I heard.
It happens.
Yeah. All right.
Well, my God, seriously.
Somebody just texted on the Vancouver Ford text line. Well, Danny's on a list now.
Oh,
Danny's been on lists.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. Danny has been on that list.
That's like exhibit number 27.
While. Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny lives on that
list. And they have all the information on me because, as I've stated numerous times, going through security clearance and background checks, like you cannot fathom how much information you have to give up to get that security clearance. Coming up next, a man they should probably put on the list, or if he's not already, Joe Mazzulla. He's got thoughts on how he can make the basketball, the NBA world a better game. And it's not what you think. Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. Joe Mazzulla, head coach of the Boston Celtics. Title winning head coach. He's an absolute psychopath. And I think after hearing this quote, I think The Town truly is his favorite movie.
Mm.
Joe Mazzulla appeared on the Zoe and Beetle show and was asked about some rule changes in the NBA. He highlighted pitching an NBA power play on fouls and talked about some free throw changes and didn't really dive into the whole getting rid of the corner three.
Wait, so we're talking like a 4-on-5 or 5-on-4?
Yeah.
After
certain fouls.
Okay.
But this is where it went full Joey Mazzulla. The biggest thing that we can rob people of from an entertainment standpoint is you can't fight anymore. I wish you could bring back fighting. What's more entertaining than a little scuffle? How come in baseball they're allowed to clear benches? Every time someone gets clubbed, and this is in the NBA, you don't need to go to the monitor to see if a misdemeanor's been committed. I just don't get why some sports are allowed to clear benches. They have bats and weapons. We just don't. We just have a ball. The other sport is one of the hardest surfaces in playing instruments and pucks and sticks, and we're not allowed to throw down a little bit?
Ask Rudy T.
That is legitimately the exact thing I was going to say is Rudy Tomjanovich had his career ended.
Kermit Washington obliterated him.
Yeah. Like his playing career just went bloop, night-night.
Mm-hmm. A lot like Draymond Green did to Jordan Poole.
Ooh, yeah.
Never completely. Look, I am, it's not a secret, I have advocated for player-controlled, player-managed mentality. Much like hockey. When there's, look, baseball's unwritten rules are a little janky, and I'm not necessarily a fan of all of them.
Because they're unwritten?
Yeah. But, I mean, hockey's unwritten rules are very clear.
Yeah.
Take a cheap shot. Know that the repercussions are coming.
And our goon is going to handle it.
Look, and don't run, because if you run, you're making it worse. Take your medicine and move on.
Now, with what Mazzulla is saying, I do agree that the dumbest thing that the NBA did was you take a step off the bench and you get suspended too.
Well, the whole Malice of the Palace thing, they're like, that leads to this. It's like, no, it doesn't. That's a fan doing something.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with CJ McCollum taking a step off the bench to look down the line during a preseason game and getting suspended for a regular season game.
Yeah.
Like, that was dumb.
Yes.
Like, all of that
letter of the law.
So stupid. And the NBA does need to
lighten up
on that. Because, look, as much as, like, these scuffles and benches clear, how often does anything ever happen in a Major League Baseball fight, right? A lot of the time, the bench is clear, and it actually gets de-escalated because they're not the guys that are in the heat of it. De-escalate a little
Or
bit.
Even if they throw,
just give me a little scuffle. Yeah, you get okay the scuffle. Scuffle. And,
yeah,
okay.
Sure. Is there some disdain? But what ends up happening? Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And to say, actually, basketball is a good kind of point of reference for all the other sports because you see Major League Baseball, bench is clear. You see in football, scuffles happen, benches will clear, right? Hockey, those fights happen. You can't, like, draw this line of correlation, like, the kids are watching because, I don't know, idiocy in baseball, in youth baseball, in youth basketball, in youth football, still all happens.
Yeah.
Still happens, you know? I mean, Ron Artest told the story of somebody got stabbed through the heart during an AAU game he was playing.
So, yeah, he's not, that story is still so crazy.
Crazy.
Like, oh, he's telling that story, like,
straight faced.
And it's like, this can't be real. But no, like, a guy literally got stabbed through the heart and died.
Is this the most physical series you've ever played in? No. AAU game in New York. Somebody broke a leg off scores table and stabbed one of my teammates through the heart. Just like, boop. That was it.
Like, and you just kind of went, oh.
All right. So this series isn't physical then, Ron. Nobody's died.
I asked Chauncey Billups a follow-up. First Pelicans game. Mike Richmond of Locked On asked about veterans. And, you know, I think he was trying to get at, or at least my interpretation of it, he was trying to get at, like, having a guy on the bench that is not playing, but the sage. And there's just not many of those guys in the NBA anymore. There's not a Udonis Haslam, Taj Gibson, like, guys that have 15 plus years of experience, but also have all the respect in the world. But even though they're not playing, they're not a coach, so they're still kind of in between. But also, like James Johnson. James Johnson comes on the court, the F around and find out,
yeah,
drops off a cliff very quickly.
You're talking the enforcer type, not just the old guy. Because, like, I mean, a guy who could be that and is kind of trending that way. I feel like we forget how long he's actually been in the league for, but Nick Batum?
Yeah.
Nick Batum.
Mr. Punch Guy in the Balls?
Yeah, Captain Nut Punch.
Mm-hmm. He's been in the league for 16 years now.
But there's, like, if you take
he's
a
only
look,
35.
Yeah, it's crazy because he's a baby. But you take a look at just the longevity of guys. There's no Kurt Thomases.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have these old, true old heads that teach you a level of professionalism, but also we'll get in there and goon it up and protect guys. And I've talked to multiple general managers about this. This was a point of emphasis this summer coming out of the new CBA. And every single general manager that I've talked to about this all agrees that it should happen. that they need to find a way in the CBA to increase the roster to where you have a controlled salary slot of like $800,000. And a player has like very limited amount of minutes. Like they can only appear in like 41 games. But their sole purpose is to be the vet, the sage, the enforcer, all of those things. Your culture setter.
Ooh, right now, current oldest player in the NBA, not LeBron James.
Mm-hmm. Chris Paul?
No. No, PJ Tucker. Also on the Clippers.
But who's he's not with the team.
Oh, he's not?
They're trying to find a... He wants a landing spot somewhere.
Oh, good luck. You're 39.
Yeah, I know. But I think PJ kind of fits that mold, though.
Okay, who is this guy then? I'm going to read you the list of the oldest active NBA players. Mm-hmm. LeBron James, PJ Tucker, Chris Paul, Taj Gibson is still on this list.
He's not legally retired. A team is going to go grab him.
Kyle Lowry, mm-hmm. Garrett Temple, Al Horford.
Horford is that guy. Horford, yeah.
Jeff Green. Is Jeff Green on team?
Uncle Jeffy is in
Rockets.
Not. Rudy Gay just retired.
Uncle Jeffy's sitting over here.
James Johnson, Joe Ingles.
100% that guy.
Mike Conley Jr.
He's just old.
Starts. Steph Curry, Brooke old. Lopez.
He's that guy.
DeAndre Johnson. And now, like, just the thing, Patty Mills.
He's the sage, ooh, but he's not the enforcer.
Kevin Love is not an enforcer,
no,
but he's
old
he's
vet
old.
Sage, yep.
Yeah, 36th, Kevin Love.
Yeah, crazy, right?
Wow. All right. And then you get to Durant, Westbrook, Nick Batum. Russell Westbrook sucks.
Yeah, he's shooting 11% right now, averaging 4 points a game.
Yikes!
Yeah, it's the Nuggets, they would have been 0-3, but Nikola Jokic got them 40-piece in overtime against the Raptors last night.
A couple of those guys, the Morris twins.
Yeah, 100%.
Morris twins.
The Morai are goons. Yeah. But the thing is, like, they're... What those guys used to get contracts at the end of the bench, where now when you're 35 and you're that and you can't find a way to contribute because of the prohibitions of the new CBA and how punitive every dollar gets, those guys they're out. Like the Knicks right now are only carrying 12 active players, the actual minimum for 2 weeks, and then they're going to go and sign some guys because they need every single dollar they can get under the CBA.
Huh. Interesting. Joe Mazzulla. Wanting to create fighting again, huh?
Complete lunatic.
All right. By the way, the 76ers been fined $100,000 for public statements around the health status of Joel Embiid.
Oh, no way. When they just said his knee was sprained with no actual injury, and they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. That happened during the segment. Wow.
So there you go. Coming up next, it is Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock-ish, which means it's time for 3 up, 3 down, 3 things we like, 3 things we didn't. Coming out of the NFL weekend that was here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.